attacks, stolen cell phones, the 10th anniversary of the D.C. sniper attacks. It's time to go in-depth with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Now, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, it's Ask the Chief with your hosts Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
You can ask the Chief by calling us at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email your question at WTOP.com. You can also submit questions on our Facebook page or via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief.
Chief, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it every month. You have your Natitude sticker there that you're displaying proudly. So let's talk about the Nats and what people can expect from your point of view. And the first thing I want to ask about is ticket sales. What are people allowed to do around the stadium as far as reselling tickets? We've already seen, you know, people can go online and do this, but is it against the law for people to resell tickets outside of a venue?
Yeah, it is. You're not allowed to resell your tickets. It doesn't even matter. I think a lot of people are under the impression if they sell it for face value or less that it's not illegal, but it is. You're not allowed to resell the tickets.
And so they can be arrested? Well, I mean, what's your policy?
They can be arrested. And you shouldn't be buying tickets from somebody on the street either, because it's illegal to buy or sell.
And so you'll be enforcing this around the ballpark during the playoff games.
Yes.
And
yes.
People forewarned is forearmed.
That's right. We do it in the same thing down around Verizon as well, during, especially when the seasons really pick up and there are popular games coming, we start to see it increase. So
is this something you get issued a ticket for? Or is it something that people get handcuffed and taken away
for? It's an arrestable offense, so you can get arrested and taken to jail.
All right. Now, as far as, let's talk about traffic getting in and out of the stadium. Do we know yet? There'll be additional road closures, we've been told by the mayor, but we don't have specifics on that. Do you know what additional road closures, what time of day, will there be different traffic patterns?
There will be. We'll be putting something out, you know, at least a couple of days in advance of the games. We don't have finalized yet specific closings, because we're working on vending areas and some other events that are going to go on around the stadium. But we'll publicize it well in advance and, as always, encourage people to take public transportation.
But can people expect there to be some traffic pattern changes in the area? And as far as how people get in and out of the stadium, what can people expect as far as help from traffic control officers and D.C. police and traffic lights? We always see it on the 4th of July, the fast forward, where all the traffic lights go on outward bound to expedite the people leaving the city. Is that what we can expect?
Yeah, we are implementing with our partners at DDOT an expedited kind of flow coming out of the stadium at the end of the games. We'll put that in place. Typically, we put it in place before the end of the game, although I don't expect people to be leaving early in these games coming up. But so we'll put it in effect before the end of the game. We actually have extended the traffic control officers from DDOT and from MPD to help pull traffic farther away. So I don't know if you've ever been caught in kind of the gridlock coming out of the games. We do a really good job getting you out of the first several blocks, but then it starts to back up blocks away. So we've extended the light timing, or DDOT has the light timing, and we're going to add some traffic control folks to help pull that traffic through to get it out of the area.
And, you know, people in the neighborhood have always complained about parking and illegal parking on their streets. I know you're not DPW, but you do have tow trucks. What can people expect as far as enforcement that way? Can people expect to have their cars towed away if they park illegally?
Well, I would defer to DPW on that, but I will tell you, if it's anything like what I've experienced in the past, when there is anticipated, you know, real large crowds for these games, the people in the neighborhood start calling the agencies and saying, look, don't let them, you know, take over our neighborhood during these games. So I would imagine DPW is getting those calls now from community members asking for that increased enforcement. So I would just, you know, be cautious, because they will have tow trucks out there and they will tow you.
And you will put everything out on the web, press releases, press event, I guess, in advance, so people can plan accordingly?
Yeah, I would imagine no shorter than 2 to 3 days before we'll have all the closures, traffic patterns, and all that stuff. And we'll try and get it out every way we can. Those who listen to TOP, I'm sure you guys will blast it out for us as well.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here, taking your calls, texts, and emails on Ask the Chief.
103.5 WTOP Radio. Traffic and weather together on the 8th.
Some late delays still to deal with in Virginia on the inner loop of the Beltway, headed to an earlier crash that was before Braddock Road along the left side of the roadway. 66 eastbound had been heavy approaching the Beltway, otherwise looking good out of Gainesville towards 495. Inside the Beltway had been sluggish still before Route 7 headed to Washington Boulevard. Earlier delays to go inbound across the Roosevelt Bridge have cleared. Outbound on the Roosevelt Bridge, a car broke down near the Virginia side, blocking the center lane. 395, just a last gasp of heavy traffic north of 110 to cross the 14th Street Bridge. Also, delays easing quickly northbound on DC 295 headed to the 11th Street Bridge. Southbound delays as well from Eastern Avenue towards Pennsylvania Avenue. You will find some delays in Maryland on Randolph Road westbound. First past Georgia Avenue, left lane's blocked with tree work. Then near Veers Mill, road work blocks the right lane. You're in good shape on 270. No late problems there. 95 in the Baltimore-Washington Parkway seem to have cleared, approaching 495. Issues in Virginia. Crystal Drive's closed between 15th and 18th Streets due to a reported gas leak. And 123 Chainbridge Road at Glebe Road. Traffic signals are dark. Jack Taylor, WTOP Traffic.
As we move through the afternoon hours, look for a few peaks of sunshine as the air begins to dry out. Not as humid. Temperatures upper 70s to lower 80s. Winds out of the northwest at 5 to 10. For tonight, a little bit of patchy fog shouldn't amount to a whole lot. Lower 50s to around 60 degrees in the district. Tomorrow, lots of sunshine, a beautiful day, near 80 degrees. Increasing clouds on Saturday, rain late in the afternoon. By Sunday, highs will only approach the upper 50s to lower 60s. Weather updated around the clock on WTOP. I'm ABC7's Steve Rudin.
In Northwest Washington, 71, our temperature with clouds as we head to the low 80s.
In the nation, we take care of our own, so members get highly competitive rates on home insurance. Call a local agent to see the value of working with one company. Nationwide is on your side.
It began as a speck I couldn't feel, and if it weren't for my young son, Robert, who came late in life and asked, "You're older than Patrick's mom, aren't you, Mom?" I might never have gone to the David Drew Clinic, but I did. I went in at 8:30 in the morning and received the most intensive body examination I'd ever had. By 2 that afternoon, I knew I had kidney cancer. The clinic had discovered the speck in my kidney, the 2.5 centimeter speck that would not have been detected in a routine physical until it had grown almost 3 times that size. Kidney cancer spread, so there was no time to waste, and they didn't. The operation was a success. And 10 years later, I'm still cancer-free. Thanks, Robert. Thanks, David Drew.
The David Drew Clinic in Chevy Chase. Now accepting patients for November. Visit daviddrew.com and take your health in your own hands.
Up ahead on WTOP.
Hey, Jill, I didn't know you had a radio in your cube.
Actually, I'm listening on WTOP.com. I find out fast about traffic snafus or if my daughter's school closes early.
The world doesn't stop while we're at work.
For me, WTOP spells in the loop.
Now more of Ask the Chief with Kathy Lanier. Here are WTOP's Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
Your chance to ask the chief is now. Call us at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email your question at WTOP.com or send a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheChief.
Chief, let's wrap up on the Nationals and the playoffs. And one of the big stories that has led to a little bit of confusion, at least I'm a little confused, but that's easy to do, is the number of police officers that will be deployed and used around the stadium. Depending on which paper you read, it's either between 75 or 55. The mayor was actually not too sure yesterday the exact number of officers that will be deployed. But then there is this teletype that reporters got a hold of that indicates as many as 462 officers could be deployed. The deputy mayor said they're kind of standby officers. Why don't you, you're the chief, as the mayor said, you're in charge. Why don't you walk us through the numbers for the games?
Well, there's always confusion when internal documents get leaked and there's no context. But it is a little bit of inside baseball, so it's hard to kind of describe to somebody who's outside of the agency. But so down around the stadium, on a normal game, we have about 19 officers that are dedicated. 9 or 10 right around the stadium to help pull traffic and get things out, you know, the area in and out of the area. And then we have another 9 or 10 that patrol in the neighborhood around to help facilitate, you know, walkers and all that other stuff. So for these games, we've added an additional 40, 45 officers to that immediate area because the demand is going to be much greater. You know, you have floods of pedestrian traffic that come in and out at the same time as all these cars are coming in. So coordinating that is really not an easy task. And this is going to be, you know, obviously record attendance. So that's what's going to be assigned down the stadium. What the teletype is, and we do this about 6 or 7 times a year for various different events, we just activate the CDU platoons. They stay in their own districts. And what we would think, anticipate with these games is a lot of people who are not going to the stadium, are not going to the game, are going to be having, you know, events out in their own communities. You know, everybody watching at a particular place, ABC establishments, there's a lot of sports pubs and bars, you know, so you're going to see a lot of people who are not coming to the stadium but are celebrating in other areas. So what we wanted to do is just make sure during the times of these games that we have enhanced staffing in all seven patrol districts. So the CDU units are guys that automatically, you know, they already work in those districts. It just gives us an enhanced presence in the neighborhoods why this is all going on.
So there will be up to an additional 462 officers working on those days.
No, it sounds it's not that simple. I mean, the CDU units that are working, a lot of them would already have been working there anyway.
Okay, so let's say some of them would be on shift anyway, some of them
correct.
Would. The point that, and I know you love when I regurgitate what the union says, but but what the union is saying is that, look, not all of these officers were scheduled to work, so they're having their schedules changed. And so while this may not impact the neighborhoods on the days of the games, at some point those officers are going to have to get those days off back, and that will lead to shortages. And as Chris Bauman was quoted in the paper today saying, it's going to make the city less safe. How do you respond to that?
I mean, I disagree. Like I said, we do this about six or seven times a year, depending on what events are going on. It's something that we do very well. We try and, you know, balance out the needs for putting officers in the areas and the times that we need them. So I think to not do this, to not, and what the schedule changes are, some officers may have to change their day off. So they might normally have Friday and Saturday off, but if they're going to have, you know, these events during the week, they might have to take different days off. But it would be irresponsible.
Well, that's what he is saying leads to the shortage,
but it doesn't,
down the road.
We don't take everybody from Friday and Saturday and change their day off. We, you know, the commanders, each commander does it to ensure that staffing remains consistent across the week. So they balance that out because it's in their own best interest to make sure they don't have those shortages.
And then what about the cost of these officers? Because the cost that was given to reporters, as the mayor says, is worth the investment for safety and the money that the city will get back. But the Examiner does the math and says, and the union thinks that these officers are eventually going to have to get paid overtime because they're likely to file a grievance, as they have in the past, over these issues. And then that's when the price tag really starts to go up, once you have to start paying overtime to these officers.
Well, our teletype that went out activating these units was well in compliance with the union contract that does not require overtime. Now, will they still file a grievance and try and get overtime? Probably.
And they point out
but
that
we are in compliance with the contract.
Well,
this teletype went out in late September.
They point out that this is the same language that you've used before, that the judge or arbitrator, whoever oversees this, rejects, and they've actually won these cases in the past.
Well, again, I think as long as we're in compliance with the demands of the contract, and right now the teletype that goes out is in compliance with the contract. Do arbitrators sometimes rule that we're not when we are? Yeah, I would say sometimes, but not always. So we follow the language of the contract. We're trying to police the city the best we can. The union's always going to complain. And, you know, that's really the best I can do. I got to look at the whole interest of the city.
Let's get a call in here. We've had some people patiently waiting. Steve, you are on with the chief. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, chief, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm a resident of D.C., and Chief, I've got to say that every day that I drive down to work in downtown D.C., 9 out of 10 of the police officers I see driving in their patrol cars are talking on the cell phone, holding it to their ears. And what I need to ask is, are they exempt from the law, or are they breaking the law?
No, they are exempt from the law. We do have a policy that says that absent exigent circumstances, they should pull to the side of the road to use their cell phone. And the reason that police and fire are exempt from the law, Steve, is, I mean, if you think about it every day, I mean, this is the way we train. We have to talk on a police radio. So as they're operating their motor vehicle, they've got to talk on the police radio, which is, you know, using a microphone to communicate back and forth with dispatchers and other units in the field. So it's not something that they are not trained to do. But because they're exempt from the law, and we do enforce that with the general community, we have put out a policy that says that they should pull to the side of the road to engage in a telephone conversation or use a hands-free device unless there's exigent circumstances.
Can citizens report that? If they see an officer,
sure.
Can they take down a squad car vehicle in a time and location and send it in?
Sure. I mean, you certainly can report it. I mean, and we have to, you know, the officers get the same due process as everybody else. If we have a person who calls in and reports it, we'll, you know, investigate that. But, you know, the opportunity to prove that is difficult.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier taking your calls, emails, and tweets on Ask the Chief.
103.5 WTOP Radio. Traffic and weather together on the 8th.
Still delayed on the George Washington Parkway. Southbound around 123, headed down towards the Overlooks and Spout Run. All lanes are reported open. Earlier delays northbound, trying to get to the Beltway North CIA because of an earlier crash that has cleared, so the delays are easing. Chain Bridge Road to Glebe Road, traffic signals reported dark. Crystal Drive remains closed between 15th and 18th Streets in Arlington due to a reported gas leak. You'll find delays in Virginia, eastbound on the Dulles Connector Road between 123 and 66. Ongoing track work back again today, blocking that left lane. You will find 66 is cleared out coming from Gainesville. A little heavy traffic still approaching the Beltway. The scheduled work again today will close the left HOV exit. And on the ramp to the outer loop of the Beltway, a single right lane will be blocked off with work. We had heavy traffic reported coming up through Merrifield on the inner loop of the Beltway. There are three scheduled work zones in the area before 66, up near Route 7, and near the toll road, all blocking a single right lane. Now we've cleared out coming north on 395, headed to and across the 14th Street Bridge. Still had some heavy traffic on the inner loop of the Beltway. That's beginning to ease. Out of Springfield, earlier crash before Braddock Road apparently has been cleared from the roadway. 295 northbound, the work zone's up after the 11th Street Bridge. Continuing north towards Pennsylvania Avenue, you'll find work today blocks the left lane. Did you know that University of Maryland, University College, offers more than 100 bachelor's and master's programs entirely online? To find out more, call 800-888-UMUC. Jack Taylor, WTOP Traffic.
As we move through the afternoon hours, look for a few peaks of sunshine, a noticeable difference in humidity levels. It's going to feel a lot more comfortable outside. Temperatures upper 70s to lower 80s with winds out of the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Overnight, mainly clear skies, a little bit of patchy fog will develop. Temperatures lower 50s in our northern and western suburbs to just around 60 degrees in the district. Tomorrow, what a way to end the work and school week. Absolutely beautiful. Near 80 degrees, winds out of the southwest with lots of sunshine. Unfortunately, sun's not going to last as we move into the upcoming weekend. Increasing clouds with rain late in the day on Saturday, mid to upper 70s. And are you ready for a shock to the system? Overcast, chilly, showers likely on Sunday with highs only in the upper 50s to lower 60s. Weather updated around the clock on WTOP. I'm ABC 7's Steve Rudin.
Light rain at BWI Marshall, 71 degrees. Mist and 71 at Dulles, 73 at Reagan National. Outside the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, 72 degrees. Brought to you by Thompson Creek Window Company.
Don't miss Willie's preseason ski and board sale through Columbus Day at Willie's new location in Fairfax Circle. They have truckloads of ski and snowboard gear from K2, Ride, Burton, Vocal, Atomic, and more, all at the lowest prices. Check out racks and racks of great winter clothing for men, women, and kids at deep discounts. Spend $300 or more and receive a free lift ticket to Wisp Resort. Save big at Willie's preseason ski and board sale through Monday. Willie's, now in Fairfax Circle. Call 703-385-SNOW. Willie's!
$79 for a dental exam, cleaning, and x-rays. That is the amazing deal that United Dental Group is offering in celebration of their new Tyson's Corner location. United Dental Group even offers convenient Saturday appointments at their Tyson's Corner location. This $79 deal is a limited-time offer and includes the exam, cleaning, and x-rays, with most PPO dental plans accepted. The only way to get this deal is to call right now, 703-992-7888. That's 703-992-7888.
News, traffic, and weather on demand. This is 103.5 FM, WTOP Radio. It's Ask the Chief with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, back to Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
We'll be going to your calls again shortly at 877-336-1035. That's the number to call if you have a question for Chief Lanier. 877-336-1035. Email us at WTOP.com or send a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheChief.
And Chief, let's get right to the phones. We have James. He's calling from Clinton, Maryland. James, you're on with the Chief.
Good morning, Chief. How you doing?
Hi, James.
Hi, I was calling about your gun law that you published on your website that your officers enforce. If a person is pulled over for suspicious or maybe suspended license and they have a firearm in their car that's locked in their trunk with a padlock on it, would they still face prosecution?
So the way the law is written, it's almost identical to the federal firearms transport. So the way that law is written is if you're transporting a firearm by a vehicle, the firearm should be unloaded and either the firearm or the ammunition being transported should be readily accessible or directly accessible to the passenger compartment. So in the scenario that you're describing, unless there's some other reason that you're prohibited from carrying a firearm somewhere else, and there are other provisions in other states where you might not legally be able to possess a firearm, under those circumstances, that is not a violation.
Well, the reason I asked it because I'm registered in Maryland to possess a firearm, carry a firearm, but I was stopped in the district going through, and I'm facing prosecution for handling a firearm in my vehicle under those circumstances. I was going to a gun range, but I passed through D.C. and got stopped.
Yeah, I know. I have to look at the specifics of your case. If the United States Attorney's Office or the OAG is determined that there's cause to actually charge you with that, then I'd have to find out what the circumstances. There's got to be some other circumstances I'm not aware of.
Chief, let me ask you about a story that many people read if they looked at the Washington Post today, and that is about two police officers who really appear to have gone well above and beyond the call of duty, risking their own lives to pull two victims of a car crash from a burning car. What can you tell us about their condition and about their heroism?
Oh, the officers did a fantastic job. There was an accident where one vehicle was traveling at a high rate of speed, slammed into the rear end of another vehicle on George Avenue over the weekend. The driver of the car who collided into the rear of the first car actually was under the influence of alcohol. But the car he struck burst into flames. The officers involved here observed, literally compacted the back half of the car almost up to the front seat. The car burst into flames, and the officers jumped out when the car was on fire and reached in and pulled those two victims from the car. Actually, both victims sustained pretty serious burns, and the officers some minor burns to their hands and arms by pulling them out. But that was definitely, I've been in situations where you've had a vehicle and it's on fire in front of you, and it's a it takes a lot of courage to reach into a car that's burning like that and pull people out, because there's a gas tank full of gasoline and you never know when that's going to, going to ignite or explode, for that matter, along with all the tires that typically explode. So they just did a fantastic job.
Chief, let me ask you about a very high-profile case, the beating, mugging of a Capitol Hill resident near Eastern Market, Thomas Maslin, who still in the hospital. You made an arrest, three arrests. You arrested three people recently, a juvenile who's charged as an adult and two men in their 20s. I think there are still questions as to whether these men had anything to do with other robberies and beatings, particularly another one that happened just blocks from where Mr. Maslin was beating. Have you been able to connect them to any other crimes?
Well, as you know, they were arrested for a separate robbery of three individuals the same night. So we know now they're involved in at least those two. We have not yet gotten to a point where we're in a position to charge them with other robberies, but we certainly are looking at other robberies.
Let me ask you about Occupy DC. We just had the year anniversary. They came back. They were downtown. Were there arrests? Are they still around? What are you anticipating as far as Occupy DC?
They're still in the city. They're still around. We didn't have any arrests from the Metropolitan Police Department. It was a fairly small group. They marched around to a couple of different sites. They were pretty cooperative with police, so we didn't have any problems. And in the past year, I think it's been pretty quiet here.
Let's get another caller. We have Z, who is calling from Capitol Hill. Z, you're on with the chief. Z, are you there? We lost Z, but here's what Z wanted to ask about a particular intersection at 1st and H Streets, people pulling out and blocking the box with their cars when they're trying to get through an intersection. They can't make it through. This has been something that, commuters struggle with every single morning and every single afternoon. There's going to be photo enforcement, I think, correct, on this soon. What can you tell us about that?
Well, blocking the box is it's a nuisance, and it really causes a lot worse traffic backups than we would normally have. We are going to implement a program in the upcoming year that's going to enable us to place devices in areas where it is the worst, blocking the box, that is, and we will be able to issue photo enforcement from those citations. The problem with doing it with real live police officers is, the obvious. When traffic's that congested and you get a police officer who makes a traffic stop, now you've tripled the traffic backup, because one, there's blocking some of the lane, and then you get everybody that wants to watch the police activity. So I think it's a great solution. And for the caller who called in, that should be coming by the beginning of the year.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here on Ask the Chief.
103.5 WTOP Radio. Traffic and weather together on the 8s.
Reportedly cleared out 95, 395 north and southbound, basically between Woodbridge and the 14th Street Bridge. Interloop delays eased completely. The earlier crash out of Springfield near Braddock Road cleared from the left lane. Work is set up northbound DC 295 after the 11th Street Bridge. Headed towards Pennsylvania Avenue, you've lost the left lane today with midday work. Also, we had some issues on 450 out in, near Crownsville Road at the Ridges Gateway. State police reporting a collision blocking 450 in both directions. In Virginia, Chain Bridge Road to Glebe Road, traffic signals reported dark. A gas leak closes Crystal Drive both ways between 15th and 18th Streets. You will find traffic easing quickly southbound George Washington Parkway headed down to the Key Bridge. Very slow traffic on the eastbound Dulles Connector Road headed from 123 to 66. Track work in the left lane. Interloop at the Beltway also heavy. Adam Merrifield headed towards Tyson's. Along the way, there are three work zones all blocking the right lane, or at least scheduled to, near 66, up at Route 7, and near the toll road. Also inside the Beltway, remaining heavy, eastbound 66 past Route 7 toward Washington Boulevard. Shop, dine, and celebrate on Alexandria's historic Main Streets, featuring Arts Jubilee and Del Rey's Art of the Avenue, October 6th. For more information, go to visitalexandriava.com. Jack Taylor, WTOP Traffic.
Look for a few peaks of sunshine as we move through the afternoon hours. It'll become less humid and more comfortable outside. Highs approach 80 degrees. Patchy fog later tonight. Lower 50s to around 60. Tomorrow near 80 with lots of sunshine. Increasing clouds on Saturday. Mid to upper 70s. Cooler on Sunday. Weather updated around the clock on WTOP. I'm ABC 7 Steve Rudin.
72 degrees right now in Washington. We are on our way to the low 80s today.
Okay, Joe. Just a bit lower. That's perfect.
What are you doing?
Oh, just putting WTOP's glass enclosed nerve center in the back of my truck. Then I'll have the latest news, traffic, and weather wherever I go.
You know, you could just get the new glass enclosed nerve app on the iPhone or Android, sponsored by RosenthalAuto.com. One-click listening, live traffic, even school closings.
Oh, okay, Joe, put it back.
Search WTOP News in the App Store.
Checking Wall Street on WTOP at 10:30, the Dow is up 88 points, NASDAQ up 13, the S&P up 11. More of Ask the Chief with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier coming up with your phone calls at 877-336-1035.
Is your heating system more than 10 years old? Stop wasting and start saving. Call McRae Heating and Air to get up to $1,350 in rebates on complete systems from Carrier. That's up to $1,350 off a new system from Carrier and McRae. Start saving up to 75% on your energy bills. This is a limited time offer, so call for details. Visit McRaeWay.com. That's McRaeWay.com. McRae and Carrier. Turn to the experts.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job. It's your life.
Now more of Ask the Chief with Kathy Lanier. Here are WTOP's Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
The number to call is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035 to Ask the Chief. You can also pose a question via email. Go to WTOP.com or send in a tweet. Use the hashtag Ask the Chief.
Chief, I attended a ceremony at the Police Training Academy. It was the graduation of new cadets, new officers, no longer cadets. I want to ask you a couple questions about that, but you had a really specific message for them about reaching out and establishing relationships with the community. And I think one of the things that has changed over the years since you've become chief is the responsiveness of the community to the police department. You've talked about this before, how they've helped so much in solving crimes. What was the message that you gave to officers that day?
Well, in every graduation since I've been the chief, the first half of my speech is specific to the class. I like to recognize the individuals in the class. But the whole second half of my speech has been the same from day one, and it is the five or six most important things that I've learned about being a police officer and what makes you effective. And really the core of that message is that the way you talk to people, the way you interact with people determines how people respond to you and view the police department as a whole. I mean, you've had good and bad interactions with police officers. If you have a bad interaction with a single police officer, it changes your perspective of the entire profession, so to speak. So, you know, I encourage them to be respectful. You get respect when you give respect. Establish those relationships so that people will feel comfortable coming to you and giving you information, and that it's okay to show a little compassion to people. We're not robots, and we shouldn't, you know, respond that way when bad things happen.
You know, it was good news for the city because for many years there were no cadets graduating, and the number of officers were going down. Now we are graduating classes and adding new officers on a regular basis. Where are we as far as staffing levels?
We're a little over 3,900, like 3,910, I believe. But we still have about 100 of them in the academy. They're still in the academy coming out. So classes are graduating now on a pretty regular basis, and so we're putting them out at the districts. But I'm glad that we got more going, sending them out.
Now, I'm sure it will not surprise you that the union disputes your numbers of over 3,900 sworn officers, and they point to senior officers. Explain to us what senior officers are.
We have about 40 that are senior police officers. Senior police officer program has been around for, I want to say 10 or more years. It was started to try and retain some of the expertise of some of the more senior police officers. We typically try and use that for a variety of reasons. I mean, obviously you have specialized skills. You've got people that are bomb technicians and people who are, you know, good training officers in the field, patrol officers. So
they're retired officers.
They're retired, and we bring them back as senior police officers. They're actually like contract employees. So there's no, they're like term employees. They come back.
So how long do they usually, this is the point the union makes, that these are not long-term employees. And when you say there are 3,900 officers, it gives the impression that there are 3,900 officers who are here to stay for a while. The union points out these guys are very temporary, stay a year or two.
I would dispute that. I mean, most of our senior officers stay for several years. In fact, I've got several that want to come into the program. I mean, I try and keep it around 40 and not go much above that. So if some leave, I'll bring in new ones. And I try and handpick from the specialized experience that I need. But we've got senior police officers that have been senior police officers for 10 years.
And then how many officers do you have that have papers in for retirement right now?
Between now and the end of the year, I think in the three-month time period, I think we've got 30 pending, which is about, I think we're averaging anywhere 12 to 14 possibly a month. So it varies, but 30 between now and the end of the year.
And then will those officers be replaced? You say you have 100 in the pipeline.
Sure.
They'll have graduated and be out. So are you confident you'll be able to stay at and maintain this 3,900 level?
Sure. Yeah. We're still hiring, and we'll continue to hire to meet attrition. Now, we are expecting attrition to start increasing now over the next few years because we're hitting that retirement bubble. So the number of officers that we hire will have to increase over time, I'm sure. But right now, we're fine with catching that.
Let me ask you a question about an article Emily Miller in the Washington Times wrote about pepper spray and mace and raising questions about what the laws are as far as what people are allowed to own and possess and carry with them for personal protection. What can you tell us about that?
The law is that for a person over 18 years old, you can purchase mace legally.
Now, mace is a brand name and it's
Pepper spray.
So which are you talking
about?
Pepper spray.
You can purchase pepper spray. The person who sells it to you, if you buy it in the District of Columbia, is required to register it and send that registration off to the Metropolitan Police Department. So you are able to buy it. There's no penalty for you to be in possession of it. It is the seller that's required to complete a registration for persons over 18 years old or purchasing and send it to MPD.
And you can carry it with you in public?
You can.
Bars, restaurants, wherever you go, you could carry your pepper if you're over 18 years old.
Yes.
Now, mace, not the brand name, but the chemical mace is a higher, I don't know the exact definition.
Correct.
Right, but it's
there's
more
a difference between CS and
so this is nastier stuff.
OC and pepper.
So mace is nastier stuff. Is it regulated differently than pepper spray?
Pepper spray is what is regulated in the district. Anything that's above that is prohibited. So like for us, for law enforcement, OC spray, CS, what we use in crowd control, is a completely different chemical.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here taking your calls via email, tweets, text on Ask the Chief.
103.5 WTOP Radio. Traffic and weather together on the 8th.
66 in Virginia remains heavy at the Beltway. There is work today on the eastbound side of 66 on the ramp to the outer loop that'll block a single right lane on that ramp. And the left HOV exit again closed today. Inner loop of the Beltway had been reporting slow traffic getting north of 66 up towards Route 7 along the way. Three work zones all block a single right lane, basically between 66 and up towards the toll road in Georgetown Pike. No issues to report late, just the track work on the eastbound connector road headed from 123 to 66. That's the left lane closed off. Still have the delay inside the Beltway on 66, passing Route 7 toward Washington Boulevard with all your lanes open. 95, 395, moving right around the posted speed, both directions between Woodbridge and the 14th Street Bridge. Northbound DC 295, the work after the 11th Street Bridge today, blocks the left lane. In Maryland, still reporting 450 closed west of Crownsville Road at the Ridges Gateway with a bad collision. Authorities remain on the scene. Brought to you by Cox. Bundle your TV, internet, and phone in one seamless package at one low price. Come by any Cox Solution store or go to cox.com to switch today. Jack Taylor, WTOP Traffic.
As we move through the afternoon hours, look for a few peaks of sunshine as the air begins to dry out. Not as humid. Temperatures upper 70s to lower 80s. Winds out of the northwest at 5 to 10. For tonight, a little bit of patchy fog shouldn't amount to a whole lot. Lower 50s to around 60 degrees in the district. Tomorrow, lots of sunshine, a beautiful day, near 80 degrees. Increasing clouds on Saturday, rain late in the afternoon. By Sunday, highs will only approach the upper 50s to lower 60s. Weather updated around the clock on WTOP. I'm ABC 7, Steve Rudin.
Cloudy skies, 73 degrees at Reagan National, 71 at Dulles, mist and 73 at BWI Marshall, 72 at Northwest. We're on our way to the low 80s.
How much is $521,345,670.47? Sounds like a lottery jackpot, right? Well, it's actually the amount of money Zips has saved customers in the last 10 years by dry cleaning any garment for one unbelievably low everyday price. Today, it's just $1.99. So if you'd started zipping with us a decade ago, you'd have enough for a safari, a new car, or trips to Vegas whenever you like. In fact, if you enter our 10th anniversary drawing, you and someone else could be jetting to Vegas for free. Just stop by any Zips to enter. With $1.99 dry cleaning, you always save big at Zips, and you could win big, too, if you're the lucky Vegas trip winner. Find your Zips at 321zips.com. Zips. Professional cleaning, unbeatable pricing. Enter at any Zips location. No purchase necessary. Must be 21 or older to enter. For complete contest details, go to 321zips.com.
Get breaking news first. Sign up for WTOP text and email alerts today at WTOP.com or by texting the word break to 91035. It's Ask the Chief with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center. Back to Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
Chief Lanier taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Please be patient. The phone lines are full right now. You can also send us a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheChief.
Chief, let me ask you about crime in the District of Columbia. The last time I checked the crime stats page, it looked like violent crime was up 8% in the district. What can you tell us about this, what I think a lot of people think is a disturbing trend?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things. One is the robberies. If you noticed, just 2 weeks ago, we had robberies and had driven them down to just a 9% increase from a 46% increase in February. It's gone down another 2% in the last 2 weeks, you know, in large part to some new tactics that we put out there. So we're really driving those robberies down, and I hope before the end of the year for that to be a negative and not a positive. The other thing that's really impacting our stats is the sexual assaults, and there's a couple of reasons for that. In August of 2011, we put a new policy in place so that, and this is kind of a national best practice that we, you know, a lot of agencies are moving to, is we get a lot of sexual allegations that take some time to investigate, to push from the point of an allegation to an actual offense. And we used to keep those in separate categories, sexual assaults and sexual allegations. But I think the move nationally, and we've attended several conferences with other law enforcement agencies, is that all of those allegations really should be counted from the very beginning, and then you can back down if they are. And a lot of them are washed out. I mean, there are a lot of cases where allegations are later determined not to be cases. So we, since August of 2011, we have been carrying sexual allegations that have not yet been sustained as sexual assaults. So the biggest increase you see in our numbers is for sexual assaults. There's about 70 more this year than compared to last year. I think a large number of those are from that. I don't know the exact breakout, but and then robberies being the other one. And like I said, we've got that number continuing to go down, and I'm hoping by the end of the year.
You know, one of my favorite websites is your crime map.
It's down.
Why is it down?
Well, again, inside baseball, but we are switching to a new system called iLead. So it's consolidating our records, replacing our records management system, our crime, all that. So during the conversion, all of this data had to be shoved from one system and converted into the new system. And it wasn't compatible with the system that was drawing the numbers for crime because that was all automatic. So they've got to rebuild that. And it's going to take a little time. So, and we're still going through and cleaning my data. Internal data has to be cleaned daily by analysts and the new people that are helping us put this in. So it's going to take a little bit of time, but we'll get it back up.
The Washington Times wrote recently that you're picking and choosing your crime stats.
It's the twice a year UCR story.
Well, yes, that the feds go by one accounting system and you go right. by another, and depending on which are more favorable to you, those are the numbers that you submit to either the Council of Governments or to the FBI or to the public.
Well, I mean, first of all, any reporter that doesn't understand UCR by now and reports that way, I'm sorry, they just shouldn't be a reporter. I mean, this is a national. So in the COG, the only reason UCR numbers are used in COG is because they're trying to compare crime across jurisdictions. And since we all have our own criminal code, there's no way to compare crime across jurisdictions. This is why the UCR was created. So they couldn't use just local data and get any kind of comparison. So they have to use UCR. If I wasn't required to submit UCR numbers, I tell you, I'd stop submitting it because it is confusing to the public. I publish both on my website. But when I report to my local community people, I give them the DC code stats because that is our laws. But for reporters who don't understand UCR and a report like that, that's just poor reporting as far as I'm concerned.
Let's get back to the phones. Marlene is calling from Temple Hills, Maryland. Marlene, you're on with the chief.
Yes, hi, Chief Lanier. I had spoke to you a few months ago on another Speak to the Chief, and it was about the breathalyzer machines. And I thank you because your office did get back with me, and they referred me to the what the U.S. Attorney, I'm not sure which, but he called me and he stated that he was basing it on the date, and we found out later through all the reports that it did actually go back further. But at that time, this is what he told me. But we obtained a lawyer because we wanted to get the record clear. But he cannot find his case. Is there a way that I can get his case?
I mean, the only thing I can tell you is if you've worked with the Office of the Attorney General, OAG, who are handling all of those cases, that matter is kind of in their hands. I mean, I can try and assist you with follow-up with the OAG, but I really can't. I don't know what else to offer you at this point because they handled all those cases.
As a reporter, I can just tell you the D.C. Superior Courts can get you case files from any case that's gone through there. It's very easy to do, very user-friendly.
Public record if you have the date and the name, you can go to the Superior Court.
Right, and get that. Chief, let me ask you about a political controversy that's been in the news, and that has to do with D.C. Councilmember Michael Brown. There is a lot going on around him, but one of the things are allegations that money from his campaign went missing, may have been stolen. There, according to the council member, there's an investigation that he's turned it over to your department. What can you tell us about what's going on there?
There's an investigation by my department.
You know, a lot of people would say that, you know, or would ask, are you dragging your feet on this because he is now up for re-election and he or you or somebody doesn't want anything coming out before Election Day?
Well, we don't. So let me just in general say we don't determine the speed of all investigations. There is an investigative process that involves a lot more than the Metropolitan Police Department. And we're not going to rush or drag our feet on any case for anybody else's purposes. Our job is to make sure that we move the case along at a pace that the outcome is correct. So we're not going to speed it up because reporters want to know. We're not going to slow it down because somebody, you know, doesn't want an impact of elections. And there's a lot of others involved in this ongoing investigation to include the U.S. Attorney's Office. So I think the allegation that we're dragging our feet kind of crazy. I think what people want is justice, and they want it to be done right, not to be influenced by pressure either way.
What about the allegations that monies were stolen from his campaign? Do those appear to be legitimate allegations? Is this a serious... What can you tell us without...
I mean, the allegation is that money was taken. That is what is under investigation. And so until we have substantial information to support that, there's not going to be charges brought. So without that threshold being met, nobody's going to be charged. And so we get to that point and we have somebody that can be charged, they'll be charged.
So it sounds like right now you don't have any substantial evidence that supports those allegations.
There's an ongoing investigation into the allegation. I didn't say there's nothing to support. I said there's an ongoing investigation.
Is the council member cooperating?
Absolutely.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here taking your calls on Ask the Chief.
103.5 WTOP Radio. Traffic and weather together on the 8th.
Work zone in the district, northbound D.C. 295 after the 11th Street Bridge. The lane's continuing north to Pennsylvania Avenue. Crews working today, blocking the left lane. On 95 northbound in Dale City, construction blocks the left lane today. You'll find track work eastbound on the connector road again today between 123 and 66. Blocking the left lane of 2. Chain Bridge Road to Glebe Road, traffic signals had been dark. Westbound Route 7 at the Beltway, single lane gets by the work zone. Delays reported back near Idlewood Road. Crystal Drive remains closed between 15th and 18th Streets due to a reported gas leak. Inner Loop of the Beltway in Virginia, the work zone set up after Route 7 and after the toll road, both blocking the right lane. You'll find in Maryland, westbound Randolph Road, couple work zones. First one past George Avenue blocks the left lane, then near Veers Mill, road work is in the right lane. Maryland State authorities reporting 450 west of Crownsville Road at the Ridges Gateway. The collision and investigation reportedly still block 450 in both directions. Bank local and drive smart at Apple Federal Credit Union. Enjoy auto loan rates as low as 1.99% plus no payments for 90 days. Visit applefcu.org for details. Jack Taylor, WTOP Traffic.
As we move through the afternoon hours, look for a few peaks of sunshine, becoming less humid, temperatures upper 70s to lower 80s. Tonight, mainly clear skies, a little bit of patchy fog, should not amount to a whole lot, lower 50s in our northern and western suburbs to around 60 in the district. Lots of sunshine tomorrow, a beautiful day, near 80 degrees. Saturday, clouds begin to increase with rain late afternoon, mid to upper 70s, and by Sunday, a little bit of a shock to the system, highs near 60 degrees. Weather updated around the clock on WTOP. I'm ABC7's Steve Rudin.
72 degrees in Washington. We're on our way to the low 80s today. Checking Wall Street on WTOP at 10:50. The Dow is up 82 points. NASDAQ and the S&P up 9.
It's Thursday, October 4th. Today in the Washington Post, complete coverage and analysis of last night's debate. Who scored the biggest points? Where did they stretch the truth? What did viewers think? And did either candidate emerge with new momentum? Dan Baltz and the rest of the Post's political team break it down in the A section. Also today, a case that recently played out in a Virginia courtroom provides a rare and vivid look into the brutal world of Somali pirates. Read all about it in Style. Then in the local living section, singles night, speed dating, and other reasons to check out the new trendy hotspot in your neighborhood, the public library. And in today's A section, for the benefit of future generations, we capture that historic moment, the day that giant head Teddy Roosevelt won the president's race at Nationals Park. You'll find these stories and much more today. The Washington Post. If you don't get it, you don't get it.
Now more of Ask the Chief with Kathy Lanier. Here are WTOP's Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
Final minutes of the broadcast this morning at 877-336-1035. If you have a question for Chief Kathy Lanier, 877-336-1035.
Chief, the D.C. Council is considering lowering the fines for photo-enforced tickets for speeding. It's no secret that D.C. has the highest fines in the nation, up to $250.
Well, to be clear, that's only because our fines mirror the fines, the regular fine schedule. Some other agencies actually reduce it for photo enforcement.
That is correct. What is your thought on that? Should the fines come down? I mean, you made a good point last month. We have this PowerPoint where traffic fatalities have come way down since photo enforcement.
Almost 80%.
But people complain about the fines. If it's $40 on one side of Connecticut Avenue and $250 on the other side, how does that make any sense?
It makes you slow down when you cross that line. I know that.
And so you're happy with the fines at $250?
You know, it's up to the council. Whatever laws they put on the books, we'll support them. You know, I just, You know, I think in the cost of human lives that have been saved because of the reduced speeding, I mean, literally as of today, it is almost an 80% reduction in traffic fatalities. And this is over a time period where the population has exploded, where you have bicyclists and pedestrians, you know, multiplying across the city. You know, so the cost for me is human lives.
I'm sure you read Courtland Malloy recently talking about how he likes to speed.
He likes to speed. Thank you, Courtland.
And he says that the speed limits are wrong, that the speed limits are actually the problem here, that they should, the drivers should be allowed to drive faster than they are.
Well, I mean, I almost think that, I mean, you have to look at this as a totality of circumstances here. I mean, you know, is the question that the engineers, the roadway engineers need to look at the roadways and determine if the calculations are still what they believe they should be for speed signs. I mean, that's based on roadway engineers, what the speed limits are set for. Maybe that can change at this point because of changes in the roadways. Who knows? So, I mean, there's an argument on all sides. So we'll enforce whatever it is the council comes up with.
Your thoughts on his column?
Yeah, I was laughing. I thought, you know, it's funny. He was talking about how he likes to speed around the city and, you know.
Have you got your eye out for him?
Yeah, I know what Courtland drives.
Chief, let me ask you about a book that I'm reading that is absolutely fascinating. Is the history, 150-year history of the Metro Police Department. The first sign of law enforcement in D.C., four guys with sticks.
That's correct. In 1805, there were four constables that were appointed, and they were, which is where the cop comes from, constables on patrol. Four constables that were assigned to split the city into four quadrants. That was our first police force.
And it talks about the officer who was supposed to be guarding President Lincoln on the night of his assassination was most likely out either with a prostitute or getting drunk at the time.
Not one of our prouder moments, Mark.
But it's warts and all, it shows the whole history of the city. But you were telling me that the logbook for that day of the assassination is actually on display in the police station. People can go down and see these things. Is that correct?
Yes. We actually have the first handwritten record of the Lincoln assassination in our logbook. We have a lot of other very interesting artifacts from the beginning of the police department.
And the handwriting is impeccable.
It really is. I mean, I guess that's back when they really used to teach kids handwriting in school.
If for no other reason. But so people can go down to MPD if they want to and go to this.
You have to schedule appointments for walkthrough at the museum because it's not open 24/7. We don't have staff in there 24/7, but we will take, you know, some tours through there.
Chief,
your favorite fact. Well, I got my favorite fact from
the history book. What is your favorite?
This is the money line. All right, so the Metropolitan Police Department actually stopped and cited Ulysses S. Grant three times for speeding. He actually was racing his buggy on M Street where he was taken into custody. We seized his horse and buggy. He had to pay a $20 fine and walk back to the White House.
And the officers offered to let him go once they realized he was the president.
They weren't sure if they could charge a sitting president unless he'd been impeached, so they ended up letting him pay a fine and walk back to the White House.
There are a lot of those great stories in there. Chief, it's 10 years since the Beltway snipers terrorized our region. You were commander, I believe you were telling me, of the 4th District at the time. The one and only murder in the district happened in your district. What do you recall of those days?
I really recall just about every detail of the whole time period. I remember the entire region. People were afraid to go and get gas. They were afraid to go shopping. We would get literally dozens of calls and emails and letters from people who would ask, what should I do? How do I get my groceries? And how do I do this safely? It was just, you know, all of the events around that whole time period are very vivid in all of us who were working in law enforcement at that time, very vivid in our memories.
I remember I was living on Capitol Hill at the time, and the only playground we would take our kids to was the playground right across the street from the 1st District. Mm-hmm. Did you see a lot of people hanging out around police stations?
And then a lot of people who decided to just change everything about the way, and that's what was so shocking about the impact, is everybody just changed everything about the way they went about their daily business, and that was the hardest part of what happened around that time.
Everybody was looking for a white panel van at the time, but D.C. police had a different suspect vehicle. In hindsight, you guys were right. What is your reflection of that?
Well, you know, it doesn't do any good to criticize when you're looking through hindsight. You know, in hindsight, things always look much different than they did, you know, at the time it was going on. The actual lookout for the vehicle in our case was the vehicle ultimately that they were using. So, but there was only one case in the district, even though it's called the DC Sniper, only one case.
But you were confident at that time that you guys were looking for the right vehicle and they were looking for the wrong?
We felt very comfortable that our lookout for that car was right.
DC Police Chief Kathy Lanier, we appreciate you coming in every month,
All right, Mark, thanks.